This is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And today, we are going to be hearing the story of Scott Drummond. He built an incredible software company here in the region and was fortunate enough to have a nice exit that created a lot of opportunity for the people in his world. So today we're going to hear his story, and I think you're going to be inspired. Party Center Software, Scott's company, really made a big impact in that industry. And now that Scott is out of that industry, he is beginning to invest into local startups. He is helping me with the Growth Factory, and you'll hear Scott on the show today reference the Growth Factory, which is really part of my mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution. And I think as he references that, we'll touch on it a little bit during the show, but I want you to stick around till the end of the show, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the Growth Factory and what it might mean to you. Stick around, my friends. Today, I am extremely fired up. We are going to be talking about winning with Scott Drummond. Scott is a guy that has won in many areas of his life. So we're going to be hearing a little bit about his story as an entrepreneur. He's now investing and advising early stage companies. But really, the subject of winning is something that I don't think we think about as much. Not only what's it take to win, but even in today's society, is it okay to win? Is it more acceptable to sort of blend in and sort of fit in? Or if you're in entrepreneurship, is it more important to stand out? So we're going to be talking about some of the philosophies around winning and what it takes to win with Mr. Scott Drummond. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks for having me.
So we better get your background here. You built an incredible software company, had some success as an entrepreneur, and ultimately an exit, and now you're on to other things. But maybe we can just get your background in business, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it started in 1998. I'm 1 year out of high school. I take a web design course. Most people don't realize this is pre-Google. I mean, I don't even know if Yahoo was around. I mean, Netscape Navigate. I mean, it was literally the wild, wild west. There was nobody that could advise you on how to do it, right? So it took one class on website design and said, hey, I can make this a business. And so off it went. And from there, it rolled in and incorporated as soon as I graduated from Sac State. BS in marketing management. It was the fastest thing I could get out with, right?
How do you get through in three or four or five years?
The least amount of credits.
How many years did it take you to get through?
It took me five.
Two and a half
junior college and 2.5 at Sac State.
Okay, yeah. So pretty aggressive, but yeah, not as fast as it could have been.
But I had a business, right? So I was running this business and doing a lot of things
the whole time
through. So it was like trying to run it and do these things and grow. But yeah, so then from there, my wife and I bought into a little indoor kids play center called Bounceopolis in El Dorado Hills back in, I think it was 2005. And then I realized very quickly, we had a paper calendar at the front, right? Like a paper, like you remember the old school big giant calendar, and we were writing people's names, when's the kid's birthday, when are they coming in? And I was like, I have a phone with the internet, right? It wasn't the internet today. There's no iPhone, but I was like, I could get things on here. Why am I not able to do this? It makes no sense. I looked around and closest thing I could find was probably like $50,000 or $60,000. And it didn't even do what I wanted to do. It wasn't
like
online.
Like a scheduler for
your
phone.
Scheduler, but it wasn't even for your phone. It was just like for the industry, the family entertainment industry. And I was like, I don't want to spend $60,000 on a software product. I want to make $60,000. Like that was like, so I was like, I got to build something. So I built it and then we just blew up. I mean, my first ever sale was a multi-location deal, right? It was just because it was so hot.
Interesting. So you were a bounce house business, developed software, and then the software part of the business was the part that really took off.
It was the only thing. I mean, you can't scale a physical location, right? You can multiply it, but you can't scale it internally like you can with software, right? So you can't, the winning isn't as deep with a location base. There's a lot more grind that goes into it, whereas software, you just flick a switch. And we had some false starts where we had to redo the software a couple times. because we didn't quite make it scalable. I mean, software, everyone knows software as a service now, but if you were to ask me back in 2005, those words didn't exist. It was application service. ASP was the closest thing we had to that.
Well, how important is it, would you say, to be more of a pioneer? You're pioneering at that moment in that space. Was the timing critical?
Well, I mean, you put a gun to an entrepreneur's head and they're just going to figure a way around it. I mean, it just, it didn't have a choice. Like I wasn't searching to be a pioneer and to create a software and to lead the forward. I wasn't looking for that. You just, when you have that mentality, you just do it, right? Hey, this is what's in front of me. I have to conquer that mountain. Let's go. Right.
So you build this business and you ended up scaling it nationwide.
Internationally.
Internationally.
Yeah. We primarily US and Canada, English speaking, although we're in Romania. I mean, we're in some countries where I wouldn't even think that. I'm like, it's only in English. Like, yeah, we don't care.
Who uses this product? Is it entertainment centers?
Think Chuck E. Cheese, Dave and Buster's. I mean, one of our bigger customers is Urban Air, right? Which is they're a huge brand indoor adventure park. They have trampolines. They start off as trampoline. They're more of an adventure park. They have go-karts, mini golf, laser tag, bowling. You look at all the bowling locations. So everybody from a small mom and pop mini golf bowling up to a huge. I mean, we had King's Dominion. A lot of Cedar Fair parks used our software. So I mean, we had some of the big boys and some of the players. But with everything, there's competition, ebb and flow, and the higher up you get, the more susceptible you get to, new CEO brings in, a new desire and out you go and they bring in something new. And so it's a constant battle.
Well, so you end up becoming this platform basically where people in that industry want your product so that they can service their customers better.
Yeah, exactly. It was an online and it morphed into a point of sale system. So if you walk up, the whole thing and really was an employee management tool. I mean, the number one thing that we did was allowed the managers to control and I mean, I'm not going to say that my customers, employees are not that great, but my employees weren't that great, right? When I had my indoor center. So that's what I was joking. My employees weren't that great.
Humble.
So we had to do what we could to protect. You got a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid. I mean, regardless of the age, they just don't care, right? Yeah. You have
it's
to build
their lifetime career. Yeah. So they're coming in just kind of
You can build it. You can build a culture of caring. You can build it, but right out the gate, they're going to just like, I don't care if the pizza's order's messed up. I know they wanted four, but I'm just going to give them one. Well, you only show up with one pizza. Mom's pretty pissed. Wait, where's mother four?
Yeah.
Our software would red flag it and warn it. And so anybody looking would say, well, there's something wrong here. And so that management tool, like it just kind of morphed into a full, enterprise is a little too big of a word for our software, but because it's a little mom and pop enterprise, right? Their whole business could be run, timesheets, everything. They can know what's going on and how effective they're running and how much their employees are messing stuff up.
Okay. So you build this business and then you had an exit. You're still with the company today.
Yeah, 2019. Yep, 2019 had the exit. And that's an interesting thing. For all the entrepreneurs out there, most of them have a fantasy where they think their business is worth more than it is. I actually had the opposite problem. And maybe it was imposter syndrome, but I only viewed my business as this small, I said it's worth X, right? And I'm thinking it's worth it. Well, then when I go to exit, I got approached and these people said, hey, it might be worth more. I said, well, okay, talk to me. I'm not going to say no until I know what the number is. And it turned out that there was a whole realm with credit card payments that we were making probably $400,000 or $500,000 a year off siphoning off bits, basis points off of bips off of credit cards. But that is what made my business worth twice as much as I thought it was.
Interesting.
And I had no idea, really. I mean, I never really thought about it. And there's little niches in every business where your exit could be somebody you've never heard of. You have no idea. And you got to just,
Somebody else sees opportunity in your business that you hadn't uncovered yet for yourself.
They could double the EBITDA in 12 to 18 months. I couldn't double my EBITDA in 12 months.
Almost like a something that you have that might not be your strength, might be somebody else's strength,
100%.
And they can bring that to you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for people listening out there, you think about like, okay, credit cards was yours. Can you think of like for other businesses, how that might be, somebody might have some hidden assets within the company?
Yeah. And with some of the young up and coming, like we're angel investing, all these, mm-hmm. some of these things are more synergistic. Like look for other businesses who can leverage you. There's a friend of mine trying to sell his business and he's got a bunch of contracts. Well, those contracts for you know, doing some internet service, those contracts are worth exponentially more to this company wants to buy them. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't, my buddy's company's going to run them out of business. So yeah. They got two choices. You can buy them up, or that section of the hole is just going to go down. So you better pull the trigger on it.
Yeah.
And I've seen it with other startups too. Like, their data has real value. They're not able to extract the value at it at the moment because they're an early stage company just trying to get over the hump, but they're building all this data and it's got some real value to somebody.
Well, yeah, it's funny. My dad, he worked for, I think it was Ross Bros company at the time. He's doing contracts, and he brings me just this little snippet of a contract. And it was just like one sentence. He's like, you need to put this in your contract. Like, what is this? He's like, it's from the Gartner Group. And it says, you're allowed to use non-identifiable data for normal business use, or some language like that. Basically what it's saying is all the transactional data, everything, I can take that and I can leverage that data. So I could tell you that a business that has these type of activities, that's in a city of this size with this amount of, within 5 or 10 miles, can generate this amount of revenue. Well, I'm not telling you what businesses those are, but I can statistically tell you that if you get a business like that, this is probably what you're going to do, right? And so you can leverage that data. We've never done it. We've never leveraged it, just because we didn't really have, there wasn't a channel to do that. But you can leverage it internally, right, to help people and help your customers. So we actually do that. We send out a report every year that kind of says, so where are you within our ecosystem?
Yeah.
How do you work?
I mean, one other lesson I'm kind of pulling out of your story here is, sometimes I say the truth is in the trenches. And so you were one of those operators or business owners that was in the middle of your bounce house business. You had, if you would have been one of these guys that was running the kind of like the silent partner from the side, you might not have discovered these opportunities for growth within the business, well, yeah, developing that software.
It was
you needed it.
It was a Sunday a.m. call. Sunday morning, 8 o'clock, high school girl calls me. I can't come. I'm sick. Well, she's probably hungover. She couldn't go in. I didn't know when the first event was of the day. It's on the calendar. It's on a paper calendar at the front of the office in Eldorado Hills. It's just like 20 minutes away. So I have to drive down there Sunday morning, miss breakfast with my kids, miss it all. And I'm livid. And that's I'm like, why can I not get this on my phone? This makes no sense. And so that's what did it. And I luckily didn't have an event for like 3 or 4 hours. And I sat there and just Googled. Well, it wasn't Google, but whatever it was, you know, Yahooed it and couldn't find anything. So just ended up building it.
Amazing. So yeah, my takeaway of that is you were in the business, you were dealing with the hands-on issues of the day, situations. And you know, if you would have been more of a silent partner, you might've heard something different from your employees or what
I would have never heard it.
Yeah.
I would have never got that vision. Yeah, you definitely need to be in the middle of it. Too many people try to say, well, I'm too good for that. I mean, I always tell people, man, I clean the toilets at my building that I had for years until I finally just got tired of it. And I'm like, okay, let somebody else do it.
Well, you think about how to be great, how to be a great entrepreneur, how to be great at anything. You're not sitting in a classroom. I'm sure you learned some great things at Sac State. It's a great school. But like, you don't know how to win. Figuring out how to win in a classroom, you can get some helpful hints and some nice tips, but really each game is a little bit different. Just like you and I were talking before the show, you played football. By the way, I want to hear the story about how you ended up joining, deciding to play football. I'm a football guy, but you can't tell somebody how it's going to feel to get hit until you've been hit, right, in football.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah.
Well, I've never been to war. I've never been, but I've got buddies that are military, and they can just look at a guy who's been in combat and go, oh, you've been there. Right. And it's like when we first kind of sat down and we were talking, it's like just those key phrases and things you lean into. I'm like, oh, this guy's right up my alley. Him and I are talking that same language and we're on that same path. Right. We might think there's different ways to get there, or might not have concealed the idea of how to get forward to that. Like with the growth factor in Sacramento, we haven't figured that out just yet. Or I haven't. You're working on it.
I'm figuring it.
But yeah, you're figuring it out. I'm excited.
I'm in the trenches.
Yeah, you're in the trenches. But that's that thing where, you know, you can see that. And so, yeah, unless you've been physically in it, and kind of, I'm, it's weird because I always tell people, I really want my kids to learn how to lose. I want them to learn how to lose. Like, get up, fight for it, lose. Because when you succeed, right? I remember my son playing T-ball. Actually, he was so upset because he played good, but he never was getting the award, right? And then, he's never getting the game award. And then all of a sudden, he fought for like 3 or 4 weeks, had just a great game, and he got the award. And that was so much sweeter for him to get it for really doing something, not the old trophy for showing up, but he really played hard. He improved every week. Those kind of things.
So understanding what it's like to fail,
sacrifice, maybe failing sounds a little too drastic of a word, but just sacrifice, so effort.
You know, nobody goes through life undefeated. Everybody loses games. Everybody doesn't get the starting position at some point in their athletic career. Yeah. And what I'm hearing from you is you almost want some of that for your kids so that they enjoy the sweet taste of victory.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't be a winner without losing something precious, right? You know, everyone remembers. I remember double overtime and losing double overtime in state championship my senior year. I remember that.
Football.
Clear as day.
Yeah.
Clear as day. It was brutal, right?
Double overtime,
losing in the mud, down at...
Yeah, you've been through war. Football can be a little, like war in cases. So you went through the whole season in the championship, double overtime, right? So this is like, it's been a painful...
Undefeated.
In the mud.
Undefeated.
Probably some blood. Okay, give me the situation. You lost.
It's where it's University of Stockton, UOP, and it was just double overtime. And I know our quarterback, Samuel Clemens, came back and threw a couple of touchdowns and, you know, some calls. And then it was just a short kickoff that bounced off kind of the guy that was my backup, bounced off him. They got it and they just poked it in, right? It was just one of those things. Like, it was just, we had it and, you know, you lost it. But it's just one, it's one of those things you remember, but it makes winning so much better, right? When you lose that drastically, you're like, okay, the next time, you know, I'm going to come in. Yeah, it reminds me that you're telling me that story about football. I actually played competitive soccer when I was a kid, and I was like, I'm going to go play soccer as freshman high school. So I go out. And I'm like, what, 5'11", 175. So I'm a big freshman.
As a freshman,
just a big dude. And just towering over everybody. Well, all the other guys are like 110, 120. They're tiny little guys. So we're just running and running. And I'm just like, this is terrible. Is this all you do is run? And I look over in the other field, and there's like 40, 50 people there. And they're just sitting down for like 45 minutes, stretching, doing whatever. I don't know what they're doing, but they're not running. So that very next morning, I walk to the counselor's office. I say, hey, can I switch to that other sport? Having be football. Like, I'll just sit down and, yeah, this is way better
football,
than running.
The easy sport.
No, it wasn't easy. It was just different, right? Your skill set, like my skill set had changed. I mean, it's kind of like an entrepreneur. What I had to offer wasn't conducive to soccer anymore. But like my physical abilities, they just didn't match up. So I had to pivot, right? In the entrepreneur world, I kind of had to pivot to a totally different sport, right? And so that's where I think in the entrepreneur world, you learn that. And my parents let me do it. Whatever you want to do, you pivot, you do whatever you want to do. So give me the freedom.
It's interesting that you used the term earlier, participation trophy. That's, you know, they're almost made fun of by many people because, you know, it's basically saying if you participate, that's equal to winning the championship in some way, or, you know, being the best. And I feel like in some areas of our society, I always say it's okay to be great. It's okay to be different. It's okay to set yourself apart. But I think in some parts of our society, people don't really feel that way.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think there's a misnomer that if you're great, you have to kind of crap on everybody. You've got to be just this horrible, mean person, and you're arrogant and whatever. I mean, most of the guys that I know that are great, some of them you don't know, like, oh, I didn't realize that guy was that successful. He just drives around a pickup truck and says nice to everybody. And oh, wow, I didn't know that, right? Or I didn't know, because I think the people that are truly successful, they don't have to go tell you they're successful. Most of the guys that I know that are great, they don't ever tell you how great they are. Well, Mark Watson, my football coach, mm-hmm. Show me, don't tell me. Yeah. He'd say it every stinking practice. Show me, don't tell me. Stop yapping. Get out there and do it. It's like, oh, all right. Yeah. So that was the key to kind of, you know.
Those type of people too, they end up being the people that we respect most in life, the ones that show us, don't tell us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got connected up through Dale Carlson, Sleep Train.
Family
friend. He's one of those guys that super humble, doesn't want to be on the billboards, yet he's had this tremendous success.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we've been family friends for a long time. I knew he had a, you know, mattress company right as a kid, and then my sister went for work for him. I was like, oh, that's a mattress company. Okay, that's a little different than I was thinking. But just the nicest, sweetest guy. He'll talk to anybody. You know, he's got a lot of stuff with foster care, which has kind of turned me onto some things with foster care and things that we're kind of help out with. And
okay, so this Dale, incredible guy. So you kind of we could talk about him, but you've had this tremendous success as well. And I sort of wonder, you know, downplaying it is politically correct, right? So you've had a lot of success, and maybe it's just your personality to live more humbly, but we've been taught to sort of downplay that so that people don't feel like we're bragging and things like that, which I agree with a lot. But deep in there, there's a competitiveness. There's got to be a competitiveness that is like like none other. Otherwise, you wouldn't have achieved. Am I right?
Yeah,
and Dale's got to have that, too.
Yeah, you got to, as a business owner, you almost have to be a little delusional, right? What are the odds, right? The odds and the stats, we all know 95% of the businesses fail and all, like, well, not me.
Yeah.
Not me. Not my business, right? I'm not going to fail. And so I'm going to succeed. And so that's a competitive. I think, you know, talking about that, it is a little socially unacceptable to maybe push into your greatness. But with the Growth Factory, with the incubator, it gives a platform where when you come in, and we talked about this, it's hard to talk to people that haven't been there. Because if I tell you something that it's a big deal, you'll look at me and say, oh, okay, nice. That's a lot of hard work. Well, if I tell somebody that doesn't understand, well, oh, you're just bragging. You're just telling me how great you are. It's like, no, I actually lost money on that deal, but it was a big deal. And it's going to get me to the next step. Right. So when you talk to somebody, you understand. So when you get into the Growth Factory, when you get amongst these entrepreneurs, they can learn like, okay, so these are the steps. These are the people I can lean into. And these people I can trust. It gives you a platform to really express the things you do well. And then also tell the kids whoever. Yeah. I've got people that are older
than
me. I've got people that are older than me that we've invested in. They're phenomenal too. But, just give them some opportunity to lean into some of my failures. Like, hey, don't do that. Like, that's how you lose money. So let's not do that.
Well, for anybody who doesn't know what the Growth Factory is, we are forming something called the Growth Factory that is a world-class accelerator and an accompanying venture capital fund and rallying the leaders of the Sacramento community and the overall region to sort of adopt these people that have greatness inside to help bring out their greatness and really build some world-class companies right here in the hometown we love. So as we reference the Growth Factory, it's about helping entrepreneurs to succeed. But let's bring, okay, so I'm invested into a number of companies, you're invested into a number of companies, and we spend time with these founders, and inevitably, they go through hard times at the beginning. We all do. We're trying to figure it out, trying to have that breakthrough moment like you have had, like I have had, like I am attempting to have with the Growth Factory. But you know, you've got these people, you've had, a lot of success, and sometimes, and I'm forming this in the way of a question. I mean this in a way of a question. Sometimes we want to hold back because really many times you have to suck it up and embrace the pain, embrace the struggle, and work 16, 20 hours a day. You've got to make all these really difficult decisions to commit, to demonstrate your commitment in order to finally figure out that breakthrough moment, that software moment. And it's not easy. And you kind of need to, with some people, they've maybe been raised in a society or maybe even in a family where, I just thought entrepreneurship sounded fun. And you maybe make an investment into one of those people. And they really need a kick in the butt, right? And so you have to sort of, I'm asking, do you ever have to sort of pull out your tough love card or attitude with them?
Yeah, I mean, every entrepreneur is different. So they respond differently. So obviously, you know this, you treat them differently. Like, I don't like to get yelled at. I like to be told I'm doing it wrong and come to me and tell me how it is and give me some facts and data. Don't just say it's not right. Right. So for me personally, all my coaches learn real quick. Don't yell at me. You can just look at me and I'll correct the behavior. You don't need to yell. I like to yell for some reason, but maybe it's just my mom.
We're going to check with your kids and see if he's a yeller.
Don't ask them. Yeah. But so what you're saying is interesting. So part of I think what God's really put into me is raising up this next generation. So I was, to be entrepreneurs and to understand their value. So I was doing some work with like a local high school group. A teacher called me in, a friend of mine said, hey, can you talk to these people about your job? And I was like, well, I can talk about more than my job because I hire a bunch of people. So I know a ton of different jobs and occupations and how you can get into it. And talking to them, and then he told me something, and then I asked my kids, and I said, is this true? He said, oh, every one of these kids wants to be a famous YouTuber. And I asked my kids, I got six, so, but I asked the older ones, you know, the 10, 12, 14 year old, and they go, oh yeah, every single kid everywhere wants to be a YouTuber. And I was like, why? Like, why? I don't like, and I kind of thinking like, because when we were kids, like, I mean, I guess you want to be a famous football, basketball, singer, something. We didn't have anything else to latch onto. They see that as a viable option, but what they don't see, and what you were leading into that question was, they don't see those YouTubers working 80, 90 hours a week. They're not putting in 5 minutes behind the camera. They're editing, they're learning, they're there's so much. It's a real business. And I think we're doing a disservice by not exposing them. So I would kind of lean in with the Growth Factory. It's like, we should look at leaning into high school kids and exposing them to entrepreneurship and the opportunity to own their future. I mean, my dad worked for banks when I was a kid, and we knew all the big builders because he gave them all money. You know, we were friends with all of them. And he kept getting fired because the Japanese would buy the bank. And he just joked. He's like, just move my chair down the street and I'm senior VP and get fired. And so, but it later on, I kind of understood like, oh, when you're in a big company, you're just a number. They just scratch you out of the P&L and you're gone, right? They don't really care about you. A smaller business, I got to look you in the eyes and I got to know your kids aren't going to eat because, you know, you're not going to make any money because I'm firing you. So there has to be a legitimate reason for letting you go, not just to make my numbers, right? And but from an entrepreneurship, like, the kids need to learn that they can do, you know, I didn't really even know I could own a business, although I owned one since I was like 11. I mean, I had like a weed eating business. Best advice my dad ever gave me is said, don't charge by the hour, charge by the job. Ah. So I charge a penny and a half a square foot. Well, when you live out in Acreage, that's some crazy money. Uh-huh. These people were paying pretty good.
At 11.
Yeah, like, it was 11, 12 years old. I bought it and I found the invoice. It was a Husqvarna weed eater. It was almost $400 back then. It was 91, I think. 90, yeah, 90, 91.
So you buy a weed eater and you
because my dad wouldn't let me use his anymore. Oh, my dad was great. He would, he let me use his weeder and he charged me for gas. He says, I'm not going to charge a rental fee. I mean, I remember my sister tried to get a car and she's like, I need to borrow money. He's like, no problem. Here's a promissory note. You're going to owe me 12% interest. And she's like, well, I can get better from the bank. He's like, then you probably should go to the bank, you know? And he just taught, and she went down and did it and figured it out. My favorite story of my dad is, you know, he'd always make us pay him back with interest and all this. And I remember I bought my first car as a Azure Turquoise 69 Nova, right? And bought it from my aunt. And it's a four-door, so don't get too excited.
Okay, I got a two-door Nova.
It's not that great.
Got a really cool Nova. Anyway, I love it because I had something similar in high school.
It's super fun. Though. It's a little better. It was a three on the tree. It was a great car, but I bought it for $100. I remember my dad went, got a tank of gas, and put spark plugs on it. It was about $50. And immediately pull out my wallet. He goes, no, I got this. And I almost have tears in my eyes. I'm like, really? And he just, because that it was a lot, you know. And we were middle class, so it wasn't like you couldn't afford it. But it was just, you know, nope, this is a big deal. It's my gift to you, you know. And I just, to this day, I joke and say, you know, because I went to Oak Ridge High School in Eldred Hills. So I always say, oh, my dad bought half my car, you know. But yeah, I just don't think these kids are exposed to. So what I was getting to is I didn't really know I could own a business until my dad came in and started talking about this web design thing. And he got me a giant book from the California Chamber of Commerce. This is before really the internet took off. And it had all the forms. And so I figured, oh, you can own a business. I just made money.
Mm-hmm.
I knew how to make money, but I didn't know that was that's a business. What's a business? I didn't put two and two together. We'd been around tons of business owners and builders and all that, but I never I can do that. So
that's there's a lot of common ground between you and me. I had a business, again, didn't really know it was a business probably until I sold it. I had a newspaper route that somebody gave me, right? I was the next one in line as a little kid. Hey, I'd been helping a guy with his route. Gives me the business. And then we moved across town a few years later and I had to quit, right? So I auctioned off my paper route. It was like a hot prop. We made delivering newspapers cool, my little brother and me. And I was able to sell we actually created an auction and sold the company.
That's right.
It was funny. So, okay. So the other thing that you and I have in common was we talk about, you know, I hear the stories about your dad and your family. I only have two kids, but grew up in a family of four. Yeah, it was fine. It is fine, I should say. But you're building, so I'm thinking about you've built a successful family. I'm attempting to do that myself. You have a family compound. I'm working on my own family compound. share with me. I want to get into your philosophy a little bit as a dad. We heard your philosophy from your perspective of your dad, but now you as a dad, as a really successful entrepreneur, raising this tribe.
Yeah, it's interesting because you can give your kids anything, right? And I like some of the finer things in life, so it's a little hard. Like, you kids don't understand. Like, I didn't have that when I was growing up, but now I do, right? So, you know, but part of one of the reasons why I want to go out, is I live on, you know, we got 44 acres out in Latrobe. And one of the reasons why I went out there is I want them to learn how to use a chainsaw and a weed eater and learn how to do these things and learn what it means to put in a hard day's work. Because when you learn what it takes to, like, hustle up that the cord of wood or whatever you got to do, all of a sudden there's a connection to hard work and then the cost that it takes for that. You know, there's when you do something that doesn't require a lot of physical labor, especially young, I don't think you quite get the severity of the effort that it takes, you know, and the correlation to the funds that you get from it. So when making them work hard and understand, so that was one of the reasons to move out. Also love it out there.
Yeah. Okay. But, so what's the range of your children? How old?
2 to 14.
2 to 14. So, you know, at 14, you're beginning to understand the value of a dollar, right? I mean, at some level, right? You're beginning to, so how does that transition happen? Because I'm finding myself now as a grandfather, maybe being more of like money, you know, buy them whatever. I want to be the guy that spoils them, kind of like put me in the game.
I need relevance, right?
Let me go buy him something. I'll take him to a Niner game. Yeah. I just need to do whatever to, you know, be in the game with my grandkids. But with my kids, we weren't, it really is much of a position to spoil them. They were, I guess we had a little bit of that, but like, how do you draw that line? So they do appreciate the value of a dollar. They do appreciate what a hard day's work might feel like.
Well, the biggest thing for us is like giving, right? So we are, that's kind of one of our family's core values is giving, and what we do. And so, and my mom and dad are the most generous people. My mom specifically just gives everything. And she's just, there isn't a time where she isn't helping someone, you know, doing something. And so that's the kind of thing where you understand, it's like some empathy in a sense that you're using what you've done, what God's given you, to try to bless other people or help other people. So, you know, the kids, they don't really quite understand a lot of what it is. You know, you live in a nice house and you drive around in your little razors and you do whatever. You know, they have a lot of fun, but we don't, you know, a lot of that clothes are just hand-me-downs from our friends, right? So we don't really do a lot of these things that other people, we just don't, we put the value in the things that are valuable. And then we don't worry about the other stuff, you know. So there's, you know, I remember one of my kids was, had a pair of Lucky Jeans out in the mud, right? And it was like fancy Lucky Jeans. They didn't know what they were. I was laughing, going, "Oh, he's in the mud with the Lucky Jeans." He didn't care. And so that giving back, which is again part of the growth factory, is giving back and some of the things that since, you know, I exited right before my 40th birthday. So I guess I had kind of like a good midlife crisis, right? And it just gave me an opportunity to pivot a little bit. So what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Like, I kind of thought about starting another business and I thought, whew, that's a lot of work. You know, you've never done a business. So I get to do all the fun parts. I get to like lean into these entrepreneurs and get real excited.
So
and go,
like being a grandfather.
That's exactly what it is. Here, you do all the work. You know, I'll come back checking you a month, see how you're doing. But yeah, that's just brutal. But I think giving and generous and just being kind to people. I mean, you know, I think that's a big deal and letting them understand that when somebody is negative to you or something's happening, you don't, as a grandma dying, you don't know what's going on. No. You know, take a second. You know, the guy's yelling at you. You don't know what's going on. So just settle down and just treat him like, just think whatever the worst is that could have happened to him is happening to him and treat him like that.
Well, it sounds like your parents and you have led by example, which is a great example for your kids. I mean, if there's nothing else that we can do, we can live our lives in a way that we would want someone that we care about to emulate or respect at least.
I was going to say too, is what makes winning better is like, so I want to win and I want to make as much money as possible, but not sacrificing my family, but as much money as possible so I can give more away and do more things and lean more into those things that matter to me. Like, we just got involved with what People Prosper International, which is teaching business to people internationally, like to people in Africa, teaching them how to do business locally, right? And those type of ministries and things, those are life changing. When you show someone and provide them with three goats and show them how to raise more goats and do the milk and turn it into cheese, and all of a sudden they can provide for their family, right? In a way, and we take for granted a lot of things that we have over here, and these are things in our, so just being able to make a winning big allows you to give big, right? It allows you to turn around and share that. Still have nice things, still go to fun places. But at the end of the day, it's not about accumulating this mass wealth for me. It's about kind of like experience, like giving my kids experiences that they can take with them and then sharing that with others.
It's interesting to contrast your high school football game, the big double overtime, right? One person won, one team won, and another team lost. In entrepreneurship, it's not a zero-sum game.
Nope.
As you succeed, the people around you succeed as well. How is your success in you developing this taste for winning or redeveloping, reinforcing your desire to continue to win? How did that affect your teammates, or maybe even other people that were around you and said, you know what, if Scott can do that, maybe I can do that. He just seemed like an ordinary dude. Maybe I could probably do it too.
Yeah, it's there's some conversation I've actually had with some of my friends. I want to do it. How did you do it? And that's that part where I think getting into the high school age and giving them a taste and letting them understand there's a certain appetite to be a real entrepreneur. Like you have to be delusional. You have to be willing to just go at it full speed, but you also have to be willing to pivot, and you also have to be humble and learn from people. I didn't have anybody to learn from when I was starting, because we were in the Wild West. Like, mm-hmm. I knew like three other people that were my same age doing the same thing, and nobody else knew anything. And so now we're at a different time where, we can really pour into these entrepreneurs and give them some guidance, and it's going to exponentially improve their products and their services and get them along the journey faster. That's where seeing a variety of different people. So one of the things that I tell, my mom actually introduced me to this, to the high school kids. And I guess I never understood this, was when I grew up, I never thought, oh, what am I going to do with my life? I just did whatever's in front of me. I just did it. And then, but my, first year in college, I found it and I just started the business and that was it. Right. I didn't ever thought like, what am I going to do with my whole life? I just kept moving. And all these kids now that I know, they don't, what am I going to do with my life? I have no idea. And I tell them, well, what are you doing? Well, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out. There's no such thing as trying to figure it out. You have to do it. What is it? I don't know what it is. You have to figure that out. So how do you figure that out? Well, there's a tool, and I call it an informational interview. But my mom actually told me about it. And I tell kids all the time, I've never met a business owner. If a high school, college age kid called you right now and said, hey, can I get 30 minutes of your time? I want to just learn about what you do, your job, income, how you got there. Could we do it on the phone, or could I come in? Would you say no? No, you'd say yes right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know a business owner that wouldn't say yes.
An informational interview is what you call it.
Now, you're a college high school kid. You call up some electrical engineer. You want to learn, hey, Bill, I hear you own this electrical engineering firm. I'm going to XYZ high school. And could I have an informational? I just want to come ask you questions about your job, where you started, how you get there, what you like, what you don't like. Yeah, sure. Come in Tuesday. Yeah. Let's talk about
Any
it.
Any of us would do that.
But the thing is that you're going to get exposure. And people say, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. Then just call up. Just pick a random thing. I was going to say out of the phone book.
Don't exist Google anymore.
Google. Pick a random thing and just go ask them. Because I didn't know what web design was, and I took the class. Well, this is interesting. And then you get exposure. But the thing is, people always say, I want to love what I do. It's like, okay, I guess, right? Take your passion with you, because I love doing what I did.
Yeah.
Some of the things I learned quick, okay, I'm not a developer. I'm not a programmer. I'm hire people to do that.
And I would say, too, to piggyback onto your interview suggestion, I think that's a great suggestion. I've had people reach out to me a few times for that kind of thing, and I enjoy it. It's kind of fun talking about yourself sometimes. But it's fun helping people. But you can't, let's see how to put this. You can't become a black belt by talking to a white belt, right? So I would encourage anybody that's out there in that mode is to kind of maybe do a little bit of research about who you might want to talk to so that you can be getting information from somebody who has been there, done that. You know, the guy that has actually played football, not the one that, you know, heard about football.
Yeah, but just doing that informational interview and getting out there will get you exposure. But you're 100% correct. Because if they come to me, I can tell them what it takes for every job I hire for, what it pays, right? But you go to one of my employees that's down at the bottom, they're going to tell you what their 3 years of experience is doing support. They're not going to, I can tell you what it takes, why I hired people, why, what gets you an interview and what you want that job. If a kid wants a job, if they would listen to me, I could get them whatever job they want. It's within reason, right? They got to have at least some of the skill sets and some of the things, but I could give them a path to get that job because you present yourself in a way, it's kind of like fishing. If you present yourself as an irresistible bait, a fish is going to bite, right? And that entrepreneur, if you get into their zone and you make it, they're going to go like, hey, I don't know what you do, but I'm going to hire you because you look like you want it.
Yeah.
All right, let's speak to the employee out there. The employee that's earlier in the career, it's not the dream job. It's closer to the bounce house potentially, or maybe, you know, Starbucks or
tech support.
Yeah,
so.
Tech support's like, ah, this isn't what I wanted to do, but here I am trying to pay the bills. Advice to that person to escape from this job that's appears to be dead end. I would call BS on that, but
I agree.
Advice to that person on how they might want to approach their game. You could even, and this could be to the guy that's out there as a second stringer on the football team too, right? So like, hey, I'm not happy being second string. What do you do about it?
Yeah, well, you kind of set me up perfectly for that one. I've actually had several employees do it, and they did it on their own. It wasn't me, and I kind of learned from them doing it to me to say, oh, I should encourage employees to do this. One guy that works for me now, Will, he was just a tech support guy. And for those employees that are in something, find something your company does that you think you would be good at or you want to lean towards. Or it just gives you a half a step closer to whatever you want to do. Or maybe you don't, just a half a step closer to a new skill set, right? In Starbucks, maybe you want to go start doing, you know, I don't know, inventory control or I don't know, something. Mm-hmm. But so he came to me and said, I really want to learn how to do SQL and do the backend database stuff. And I said, okay, great. Congratulations. What do you want me to do about it? Right. And he's like, well, I'm going to take some classes. Like, well, we can't really afford to pay for them. He's like, okay, I'm going to do it on my own. And I was really kind of testing him. And he went and just did it on his own. And he learned. And then we said, he's like, well, can you give me something? Well, I can't pay you to do it because you don't know what you're doing. He's like, no, I didn't actually. Just give it to me. I'll take it home. And all of a sudden we give it to him. And he's just like a skyrocket, right? Just going off. And he's really skilled at it. And then we're like, okay, now we got to pay you more. We're like, now we got to change your position and we got to pay you more. And then he does it again and improves his skills again and go, okay, now we got to pay you more again because you're going to leave and I don't want you to leave. Right. And so, and we allow them as an owner, as an entrepreneur, you need to allow your people some freedom. I have this 10% rule. I think 10% of your time should be free to do whatever needs to be done. So they should never be fully booked up to think like as an individual, what would be best for my role, my position to do right now? It might not be something that's actually in their wheelhouse. They might be able to go say, hey, I want to go do this other thing. I want to start sketching stuff out for the developers. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not really what you do. Well, sure. Give it a try. Right. So, and that's not the first, that was the second or third person, another guy who wanted to become a developer and he had to learn how to code on his own and we'd feed him things and boom, all of a sudden he's getting paid double. So you take where you're at and just move a half a step forward. Right. And if you show any sort of initiative, your boss is going to just glom onto that and they're going to be so ecstatic. Like, wait, you want to do something that isn't just your job? Sure. What do you want? Like, I can't pay you more. I can't give you resources to do it, but if you do it on your own, right. And that initiative paid off well for these guys. I mean, they exponentially increased their salaries. And so every, you know, second stringer, well, are you great at kickoff? Cause you can get in and play if you want to play kickoff, right? If you want to go bust that wedge, you want to go do it. Maybe you can't do that anymore. But you know what I mean?
Yeah. The rules have changed. Everything, the rules have made it more of a passive sport. But
ultimately that the rule is, you know, there's always a place to go. Even for people that hate their job, you know, the skills you learn. There's a lady on Mike Rowe hat on and she's a welder, like phenomenal welder. And she said, I hated my first five jobs. I hated them. But the skill sets that I got from those jobs gave me my dream job at exponentially more money because I had the skills from that job I hated.
Yeah.
Right. And so think of it not as, you know, I hate this job, but what am I going to get out of it? Because ultimately, you know, there has to be a give and take. You need to get something out of that job more than just a paycheck. Yeah. Unless you're happy and just want to sit there and do the job, it's fine. But
if
you're not going to succeed.
If that's your mentality, hey, whatever.
Yeah.
To me,
we need those people.
Yeah, exactly.
I need them.
For me, I'm like, okay, great. There's a certain percentage of society. Maybe it's 50. Maybe it's 80%. I don't really know the percentage. There's a lot of people that sort of want to
be taken care
of. Do the 8-to-5 thing, yeah, or whatever, or live for the weekend or whatever, playing for the paycheck type thing. And then there's another group of people that are sort of continuously, I don't want to say dissatisfied, but they're not quite content. They're in growth mode, right? They have a growth mindset. And for those people, I sort of think of two things to add on. One, if you're not in a role where you see upward possibilities and, you know, excitement, go be in one of our startups that has a dream and has a passion. And if you win the championship in the startup, you can become very wealthy by being an early stage company, or excuse me, employee in a fast growing company that really succeeds. And you can get, I think, maybe more than the wealth, you can get a taste of what it feels like to win, because you are not on the sidelines. You are in the game if you're in an early stage company and you're giving everything you have for little to no pay. But as you succeed, you're getting stock options and all these other cool things that are game changing.
Yeah, life changing. Well, so I can't remember where I stole this from. It might have been E-Myth or something, but there's an entrepreneur, right? We know that term. There's a term called intrapreneur, right? Yeah. And the intrapreneur, exactly what you described, is that person who doesn't quite have the stomach to go out, right? It's just a little too, I like my paycheck, I like the comfort, I don't want to risk my livelihood because I got kids or got whatever, but I'm willing to put a lot of that entrepreneur spirit internal, and you can get those rewards. And from the startup side, if you're willing to put that in, you know, you can get that paycheck and get this. Usually it's a lower paycheck because you get the stock options and all that. But when you hit that home run, it's life changing. And even if you don't, honestly, I know so many guys that fizzled out of startups, and what they learned from that fizzle out was it got them to that next level, and it made the next startup just go through the roof. So it's I never look at it as a negative, like, you know, all the things, and I'm sure you too, you can remember back to those 4, 5, 6 times you really lost. Like, oh man, how did I lose that deal? How did I not get that? Like, how did that happen? And then you learn from it. And then the next time you come in, it ain't happening again, right?
I always think too back to, so I coached football and baseball and, you know, had a video store. So I dealt with a lot of employees and always had that coach is always looking in football. There's always could be a scout in the stands in baseball. And if you're working at Starbucks or in retail or at the bounce house or what have you, it's like, look, you never know who's walking through the door. Being great with other employees that maybe are going to go launch their own business, being great with consumers and customers that are walking in the door, it's like, look, you never know when you're going to get, like, just grabbed, right? There's a shortage of studs.
I've done it.
Yeah.
I've walked right in. I saw one guy, I remember I was at a business fair or something, Elroy County, and this kid, I can't remember his name. Big old curly red hair. Was it Ben? I'm trying to remember what his name was. And I remember he was just helping with some sort of club to do this entrepreneur fair. And we were out trying to hire people or whatever. And he was just the most, like, engaging and I said, hey, you should come apply and work for me. You live in Elder Hills. And he, oh, okay, okay. I literally hunted him down with an application and a pen. And I said, I don't care what you do, but you got to put your name and your phone number at least on this thing. He's okay. Filled it out. And I called him. Ben Eastman, I think it was. But he, you know, I hunted him down, hired him. He was the best, like, party host. So they have to kind of be kind of cheerleader excited types. So happy birthday. You know, he was phenomenal. Everybody called for him for years later. Like, hey, my son's having a birthday. It's been there. It's like, nope, sorry. He's at UC Santa Barbara now or wherever he went to go be some engineer or whatever. But the thing is, yeah, and this was, you know, 20, 15 years ago. So now, if you have that kind of personality and skill set, and you're willing to work, you're willing to put the work in, you can demand pretty much whatever you want, right? You know, the sky's the limit, right? And most people don't realize that business owners, if you show it, if they can see it, they'll do it. But you can't go and demand. A lot of people go and demand, I want X. And I mean, I've heard some really smart guys say, no, walk into them and say, I'm going to work for you for free for 60 days. Mm-hmm. And you decide what my value is at the end of that. And you tell me. And they you know, blow their socks off. If you, but if you're not confident in that, then maybe you should get some skills, because obviously you have no skills to offer. So you're in the, either the wrong place or you don't have the skills, you know? And I need to learn the skills. Well, sometimes hard work is all you need to show up and work hard to get that foot in the door. And some people just aren't willing to put that effort in. And that's that winning mentality. I don't know, with the kids nowadays, with everybody wanting a YouTube star, they don't know how to communicate with each other. So like with my, our kids, I mean, we try to make them call people on the phone. We make them look in the eye, shake the hand, like pay, look, you know, this is how you communicate with people. We're not texting everybody all the time and trying to teach them how to be human, right? Mm-hmm. And this coronavirus thing, I think, is exponentially made that us more aware, like, hey, we need to teach them how to be even more human, right? Rather than just kind of hide. And those translate really well into the business world.
You bet. You know, you think about that, maybe it's more, it's easier to stand out today as a super hardworking, great communicating teammate. It's easier to stand out and get yourself noticed, because there are a lot of people that are wanting to
juxtaposition.
Text and just go through the motions. So so anybody listening that is thinking, well, it was maybe back in the day it was easier. Well, you know what? Maybe standing out has become easier because it doesn't take quite as much effort and blood, sweat, and tears, is maybe to get noticed.
But on the counter side of that, everybody wants to be noticed, right? So you might stand out, but can you stay out? Mm. Can you stay out there and be allowed to be there? Or are you coming and just look at me, I don't have any skills, I'm just going to stand here and make a big fuss, right? So that's where you can stand out, but are you just doing it for you, or are you trying to push the company or the agenda forward in a way that's productive and valuable for the people around you? And do you uplift those around you? Are you pulling people with you when you're doing it, and encouraging them with you and helping them and leaning in? And you know, the big thing is, you know, I almost never say no to my staff if they have an idea. Sometimes I think they're dumb ideas and we've already done them. And sometimes I go, hey, we already did this and we lost a bunch of money. Can you come up with a different way to do it? You know, but letting them kind of have that freedom to go forward. But everybody wants to stand out now. And I say everybody, it's kind of euphemism, but can you stay out there and can you provide some value? So the question is, when you do stand out, you better bring it. You better do something of value that makes that business person want you to be there, or that, you know. And I think with these whatever generations coming up, all these, you know, I think the value or the need for something greater than just a paycheck, right? They want to be part of something, which is, again, that startup side of it. Our software revolutionized the way businesses did it, and it gave freedom, right? People that were stuck on their phone or stuck in a physical location for years and they could never break away because they were one of five people in the business, they're stuck. And I remember I called this one podunk bowling alley in, I don't even know where, Pennsylvania. They had like four lanes, right? The ROI was not there. I straight up, I was selling them. I said, hey, listen, you guys don't do it. Like, it's not worth it. Like, it's not going to make you any money. It's going to cost you money. You just shouldn't do it. Like, I told them, no, you know, it's not really going to. And they called me back like 4 hours later and say, no, we're going to do it because we don't have to be here. The value for us not being here is exponentially more than the dollars you're saying we're not going to, you know, we're only going to maybe, you know, make a little bit. So that the value to those people. So, you know, these kids need to understand they need to bring value, and they need to have, and when they bring value, they also feel like they want to be a part of, which again was that startup. I really think that they're going to really lean into that. So that's where I think getting into the kids and, hey, you can be part of this. You don't have to be an entrepreneur, but you can be an intrapreneur. So we can get you a paycheck. We can get you, you know, maybe you're making $15, $18, $20, $25 an hour, whatever it is. You can live a great life. You can be, and you can influence the world. You can influence these people's lives. Like, we made thousands of people's lives. I mean, I think about our software and the thousands of people that use it. And I think about, we make their life, we employ kind of secondarily through our software these people to execute on this. And it, you know, it kind of becomes a little overwhelming if you think about all the people that you employ and then all the kids that they're there and all them getting fed by the monies that you're generating. Mm-hmm. So I try not to think about that too much, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of weight. People succeed in their life.
Yeah. But so with the kids, I think this next generation coming up, they need, I'm kind of like, I'm kind of old, even though I'm just like 42, but half of me is like, come on, just get out there and do it. Stop complaining. Why do you always have to feel good about yourself? Like, can't you just do the hard work? So I have to temper that down a little bit and say, okay, no, they'll do the hard work, but they have to feel, you know, like there's a greater good to it. And there's a lot of these, you know, say kids, there's a lot of people that are willing to put the work in, but there's a lot that aren't. And so finding those right kids and changing them. I mean, I kind of feel like a dinosaur because, I mean, I love the old school, like be face-to-face. I love that. With my job, well, half of our staff, well, was remote. Now it's, you know, 95% of our staff's remote and trying to learn the new way of connecting human to human via Zoom, mm-hmm. right? And so we've got some tricks and some things that we do and games we play, and it helps. You know, we used to fly everybody out every year and do a big old thing, and we haven't done it for a couple of years. So it's, you know, I think the growth factor has an opportunity to go beyond just the entrepreneur and even to filling those businesses with quality candidates that maybe aren't willing or don't have the ability at the time to create their own business, but they're willing to put the work in. Yes. And they're willing to be a part of it, you know, and almost like having a draft, right? Or you got this deep bench of third stringers that you say, hey, we're going to bring you up. You're not ready yet to launch your own company, or maybe you don't want to, but you'd be a great finance guy for this.
I agree. I feel like the Growth Factory sort of is this platform, almost, I think, a Field of Dreams. Once we build it and start saying, hey, you want to get, it's match.com for startups, investors, employees, people who really want to, you know, change the world and be a part of world-changing type of small business that is, you know, extremely scalable.
Yeah. So. In Sacramento, I mean, I've heard you say a few times, Sacramento's second tier, and I know you, yeah, I don't.
It's like a perception.
I understand. I get it. I think, though, that so for me, I mean, I used to hire developers in Sacramento because we wanted everybody local. Well, they kept just running away to the, you know, Silicon Valley for 20 grand more. It's like, hey, you weren't worth what it's paying you. Sure, I'm paying you 20 grand more, right? And so I just said, forget it. I'll just hire them anywhere. Well, so I started hiring all outside of the region. Well, the thing was, the people in our region are hired outside of the region, right? So they're here physically, but they're working for somebody else. And I think that's happening more with COVID. They're moving in. So I really feel this is the perfect time because they'll be here and they'll be like, I really want to be connected with people. What is a business local that I could pour my talent into? And all of a sudden, like, hey, there's 20 of them right there. Pick which one. And yeah, it's kind of like a dating, like, you know, have 20 entrepreneurs there and just go on your little dating circle. Right. And so there's so much influx in the Bay Area and just all these other places where people are like, I don't have to live in there. And it's the cost of living. Like, we have great restaurants up in Aurora. We got like Milestone and Aji and C Nights, and these guys could have put their restaurants anywhere, and they would have been, one guy's, I think, from the French Laundry. He could have went anywhere and made $1 zillion, but he chose Eldora Hills. Why? Quality of life. You know, that means more to this next generation. Like, I want to enjoy my off time. I want to go mountain biking. I want to go skiing and water skiing and whatever. They want to do that. So 10-15 years ago, I don't know if those guys would have came and put the restaurants up here. They would have found a place someplace else that, you know, what made them more money. But now they're like, nah, I want the quality of life, which I think is going to translate into huge growth in the Sacramento region of just amazing businesses. Where I kind of think, because one business we invested in was called Coach IQ. All these guys are from Davis, football players from Davis, doing online kind of sports training, video annotation, you know, phenomenal product. I mean, this thing is just going to go crazy. But then they didn't feel like Sacramento was it. So they went down south in San Diego. But if we had something here for them to glom onto, I think they would have just fell over to side. They would have just fallen over. They were like, all my mentors are here. Why would I go anywhere? Yeah. But there was nothing here for them or nothing that they felt was here for them. So, and that's just one tiny little business. And there's tens of thousands of them that are just, they're getting seated in Sac State, you know, like the Carlson, the Sac State Entrepreneur Center. Anyways, we're at the cusp, and I don't even think we're going to be top tier. I think we're going to be the right tier in Sacramento. Like, we're going to be the place where people say, if you want the package, then you can come here. If you want to go make $1 zillion, go to New York. Yeah. Go to Silicon Valley. Go. You can make a ton of money. You want to make a bunch of money and have a great quality of life, then you got to come here.
Ah, I love it. Well, I'm going to wrap up with one final question as we talk about how to win. Winning is almost a way of thinking, right? It's success. You know, I like the success is not an option mentality. But for me, it's felt like the amount of success that we've enjoyed one of the things I've enjoyed most about it was options, right? It gives you choices. You want to be generous and give back to places. Others want to maybe buy nice cars. I mean, do whatever you want, but you have choices. And that's one of the beauties of winning, is it just sort of gives you more options. So now as we think about you, Scott, you've had the success, multiple successes, you're giving back. As you project out, let's say 10 years from now, or the next big win, what pull out the crystal ball and sort of imagine, if you will, what that next big win might look like? Or is it just a steady stream of helping other people win?
Yeah, I honestly think it's going to, for me personally, that big win is going to be, kind of have these pillars of kind of where I want to go, kind of figuring out what my investment strategy is. What does life look like now that I don't have to work, right? What does it look like that I can now move forward? And I have options, right? I have options. I could start a business, or I could not start a business, or I could invest. So I think for me, it's like the more people we can help, the better. Again, like, you know, the People Prosper International, you know, helping people start businesses everywhere, raising up the whole, like the more fingers I can get into lifting other, it's just, I think my mom kind of instilled that it gives me joy. It's where I get kind of, I could buy a new car and it's nice, but I get the most satisfaction from helping somebody else. So if I can, you know, make a bunch of money and then come alongside and help them, or even entrepreneurs, helping these entrepreneurs succeed and meeting their dreams, I mean, there's nothing better than that. So my biggest success would just be to knock it out of the park with all these investments and just to keep kind of leaning into these entrepreneurs locally or, you know, regionally, and then really raising up that next generation of kids to understand their place. You have power when you're an entrepreneur. When you own your own business, you got power. I don't care if you're a tile guy or a contractor or whatever, you're a welder, you have power. And that power allows you choices and freedoms, right? And so people sometimes feel they, like, especially, you know, I don't have any choices or power. It's like, then go start your own business, because you can do anything you want. You want to be a tile guy, and the next day you want to switch to be a carpenter? Hey, guess what? Go for it. Nobody cares, right? You, if you want to do it, do it. And so at the end of the day, that big win is going to be just helping as many people as possible succeed, and then helping Sacramento succeed. I mean, besides a couple year stint in Pleasanton, I was born, raised in this valley. And so I've seen it. I've seen it really grow, right? A lot of stoplights, stop signs turn to stoplights, and single lanes turn to triple lanes. And, you know, so that's what I'm hoping.
I love it. As they succeed, we succeed as investors, as people that care about our community, people that care about our family. Scott Drummond, I mean, if you don't love this guy, you don't love America, because this is, to me, this is what free enterprise and America in many ways is all about. So thank you, Scott. Really appreciate it. Thanks for name dropping the Growth Factory a number of times.
I'm
you know that's
I'm
my passion.
I'm super excited.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate everything.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
You bet. Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. And as I mentioned earlier, it was going to be a great show, and Scott delivered as expected. And he referenced the Growth Factory, my project, my years of work in the trenches with entrepreneurs is culminating into a world-class accelerator and an accompanying venture fund. And we are rallying the leaders of the Sacramento community. I call it the Backyard Advantage and the Backyard Dream Team. We're rallying this team together to help startups grow in Sacramento. So if you are a startup and you have a plan to scale and you're looking to put that plan into effect, come see me. I may be able to help you. I may be able to put you in touch with the right people. Who knows? The Growth Factory might be a good fit for you. So if you are a startup, if you are somebody who wants to help startups, I think you should come see me, and let's see if we can work together to help grow this area. Because when a startup succeeds, just like what happened with Scott Drummond, when a startup succeeds, it creates so much opportunity for the entrepreneur's family, the friends, and of course this community that we love. So I wish all of you the best of luck in your journey to fight the good fight for entrepreneurship, and of course to all those that fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, to 13 stripes and the 50 stars, and to that one big dream that's always worth fighting for, yours. Never above you, never below you, always by your side. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.